150 years ago, the United States was a very different place than what we know it as today. Not only was the nation torn apart by the U.S. Civil War, but further out west in Minnesota, there was another conflict raging called the U.S.-Dakota War of 1862. And as we look at Minnesota history, we can see that the U.S.-Dakota War shaped much of what we know now as Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and in today's installment of the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota, we're going to be speaking with Walt Bachman, author of Northern Slave, Black Dakota, The Life and Times of Joseph Godfrey. Walt Bachman, who is a retired trial lawyer from Minnesota, now living in New York, will be on the St. Cloud State University campus on Wednesday, October 16th at 7 p.m. in the Voyager's Room at the Atwood Memorial Center to share his research about two very interesting aspects about this time period. The first is The Life and Times of Joseph Godfrey, an escaped slave who participated in the U.S.-Dakota War, and also his discovery of documentation about how the United States Army developed a pay system to reward military officers for using enslaved people as servants in free states and territories during this time. I'm joined on the phone now with Walt Bachman.
Your book is called Northern Slave, Black Dakota. It's a biography of Joseph Godfrey, African-American man who was born in Minnesota. How did this all come about, and how did you find some of this information?
Well, the story is simple, how I came across Joseph Godfrey, or at least how I got fascinated with him. It evolved from a story my grandfather told me when I was a boy growing up in South Minneapolis. And it was just basically a story about how our ancestor, my great-great-grandfather, had been killed in the Dakota War of 1862. And he suggested that I go down to New Ulm sometime to check out the really terrific history center, the Brown County Historical Society in New Ulm, and told me that there was a monument out in the country that marked the spot where our ancestor had been killed. And I didn't get around to following my grandfather's advice for years, until after I retired from the practice of law in Minnesota. But when I went down, I got a number of sources from the librarian at the Brown County Historical Society, and was able to piece together the location and the means by which, or the circumstances under which my ancestor, whose name was Ernst Dietrich, had been killed. And one of the accounts that the librarian there brought me said that the Dakota warriors who attacked the band of men of whom my ancestor was a part had been led by a Negro man. And in fact, that was in an official report that went from the sheriff of Brown County to Governor Alexander Ramsey, Minnesota's governor at the time, on the very first day of the hostilities of the Dakota War of 1862. And I immediately asked, who was this black man and what was he doing in rural Minnesota at a time when virtually no African Americans lived outside of the Twin Cities area? What was he doing not only participating with the Dakotas, but was perceived as their leader? Or he was alleged to be their leader. Okay. So I got totally fascinated with his story, and I wrote up a booklet for my family about the circumstances of under which our ancestor had been killed. But I really got much more fascinated with the story of this mysterious African-American man. And that proved to be, and it was easy to determine, that was Joseph Godfrey. And I ended up writing a piece of that for the booklet of that puzzle, putting together the pieces of that puzzle a bit for my family in that booklet. But really, that's what got me captivated in his story. And I decided to try to learn more about him. And that's what launched me on this project of my obsession in writing about Minnesota history.
Interesting, because a lot of people do assume that, oh, Minnesota was a northern state, so slavery wasn't an issue. But we are finding this out that it was an issue that affected the entire country. And It's Godfrey's story, I guess, and slavery in Minnesota kind of intertwine. And isn't that how he came to be on the side of the Dakotas?
Absolutely. Although, interestingly enough, although Godfrey is mentioned in virtually every history of the Dakota War that has been published, and of course there have been lots of them, and including bestsellers that were sold right away in the 1860s, because this was a huge event in Minnesota history. And lots of books have been written since then. Godfrey appears in almost all of those histories by name, and so he has been a person who has been a known and important participant in the war for 150 years, but no previous book had ever even hinted at the fact that he was born into slavery in Minnesota, and that the reason he was living with the Dakotas was because he had been he had run away from an abusive master, a Minnesota master, to seek sanctuary among the Dakotas. So Joseph Godfrey was a fugitive slave from Minnesota slavery. And that's something that no one knew. I certainly didn't know it, and when I first saw a source indicating that Godfrey was a slave, I was frankly skeptical. I doubted that that could have been true, since so many people had written about him and no one had suggested he might have been a slave. But the more I delved into it and the more sources I gathered, the more it became not only obvious but absolutely indisputable that he was indeed born into slavery, because his mother had been a slave and brought to Fort Snelling as the slave of an army officer.
Is that something that kind of surprises people, that there are army officers, not just that it was in the North, but there were army officers with slaves?
Certainly the fact that some officers at Fort Snelling had kept slaves has been known for many, many years. Although the extent of that slave keeping and the nature of it really hasn't been studied that exhaustively. But America's most famous slave, Dred Scott, was brought to Fort Snelling by his master in 1836 and kept there on and off for almost 4 years. And it was Dred Scott's period of time in Minnesota, as well as a shorter period of time he spent in the Free State of Illinois as the slave of that army officer, that gave rise to America's most famous freedom suit, the Dred Scott case. The basis of Scott's plea for freedom to the United States Supreme Court was that he had been held as a slave in free territory, in a free state, in a free territory, the free territory being the region that is now Minnesota, for years. And that under some earlier precedents, those circumstances entitled to him to court-ordered emancipation. So people have known that there's a connection between both Minnesota and Fort Snelling and slavery for many years. But by delving into Godfrey's life, I was able to show that the incidence of slavery at Fort Snelling was really far more significant and involved many more officers than anyone had known before.
Now, how do you think that came about? I mean, was it just something that people did, or was it more of an institutionalized type system?
I think the key, as I got into this further and further, I concluded that the key to army slavery, that is, slavery as it was practiced within the United States Army, was a unique pay system that existed only in the Army. The Navy didn't have it. No other federal bureaucracy had it. No other entity had it, as far as I know, anywhere in any government, which gave Army officers extra pay if they kept a private servant. They got anywhere from a 15 to 25% boost in pay if they documented the fact that they were keeping what was called a private servant. And they got a fixed amount of money. The government paid them a fixed amount of money that depended on their rank. The higher-ranking officers got more money. And they could have, the lower-ranking officers could have one servant, the highest-ranking officers up to five servants. but only if they both had a servant and then identified that servant on their regular claims for pay. That system, I ended up concluding, created an incentive for Army officers not only to have servants, but to have enslaved servants. If you pay someone a fixed amount of money, if you paid someone in the 1800s a fixed amount of money and said, this amount of money you can keep if you document the fact that you're keeping a servant, a substantial number of them will quickly conclude that in many parts of America, including frontier Minnesota, the cheapest servants they can get were enslaved people. And so there was a financial inducement or incentive, if you will, for Army officers to use slaves as their servants. And they were rewarded, in effect, for doing so. And we know this because there's a huge collection of Army payroll records at the National Archives that I spent years combing through. It fills over 1,700 boxes of documents, over 1,700 boxes of documents containing these records. And those records show the details about individual officers who brought slaves to particular Army posts, how long they kept them, and they identified them by name, and a surprising number of the officers actually indicated that their servants were slaves. So by looking at those records, I was able to reconstruct sort of an additional history of slavery in Minnesota. And also, more importantly for Joseph Godfrey's life, to locate his mother, whom I knew had been brought there as the slave of a particular Army officer, and to trace her through those records back to her origins. So that's why there were so many slaves in Minnesota. I think it was because the Army offered a financial inducement for officers not only to have a servant, but to have an enslaved servant.
Oh, and it is almost one of those things, if you think about it, not to make light of the entire situation, but it's, that's kind of how the government works in a way, is the lowest bidder gets the job. And, if you're looking at servants out there and you've got a fixed amount of money coming in, well, free is kind of the lowest bidder in a way. It's kind of strange how that works.
It's exactly the same principle. Only it applies a little differently to an individual as opposed to a company. But an individual officer could look at the amount of money the government is willing to pay him, and make a determination. Well, how can I maximize this system? And the way to maximize it was to get the cheapest possible servant. Sometimes that was a free servant, but quite often at Fort Snelling, it was slaves.
You're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC, and in today's installment of the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota, I'm on the phone with Walt Bachman, who will be on the St. Cloud State University campus giving a presentation about his book, Northern Slave, Black Dakota, The Life and Times of Joseph Godfrey, at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, October 16th, in the Voyagers Room at the Atwood Memorial Center.
And, to go back to Godfrey once again, what eventually was his fate during and, potentially after the Dakota War?
Godfrey, after being identified at the first battle of the war, one of the first battles of the war, participated in a number of the other battles, and then he surrendered with over 1,000 Dakota people at the conclusion of the war on September 26th of 1862 out in a place called Camp Release. And then there were military trials held by General Sibley in a military court. And Godfrey was the first defendant to be tried in those cases. He was charged with murder and received one of the longest trials that was held. The judges started out thinking it was going to be their easiest case because they had some reason to believe that he had been involved in places where lots of murders were committed. But as soon as they started listening to him, they realized that it wasn't going to be as easy in his case because he claimed he had been coerced and went along because his life was threatened and by the Dakotas, who said either you join us or we'll kill you. And so they ended up concluding that he was not guilty of himself killing anyone, but that he had participated in the events. And so they sentenced him to death, but recommended that he be given clemency and his death penalty be reduced to a term of imprisonment. That went back and forth, and General Sibley, who supervised and created the court, refused to accept that recommendation, and ultimately Godfrey's fate was determined by President Lincoln himself. Because by the end of the war, the troops had been federalized, the Minnesota troops had been federalized, and they were under presidential control, and the president had to approve any death penalties. So Lincoln himself reviewed the record in Godfrey's case, and he made the decision to commute his death penalty to 10 years imprisonment.
Wow. Does he still have descendants today that are around?
Yes. Godfrey, you know, because he was living with the Dakotas, married a Dakota woman. He had one son and another child who died right about the time of the war. And then later, after his release from prison, his wife, because he testified against her father in the trials, probably wouldn't take him back as her husband. But he married first one Dakota woman on a reservation in Nebraska after his release from prison. And then when she passed away, he married another Dakota woman. So he ended up having, I think, three children who survived to an adulthood. And today there are over 100 living descendants of Godfrey, all of whom, as far as I can tell, identify as Native Americans. And I interviewed several of them in connection with the book, and wonderfully, 12 of those descendants came to a book launch we had in Minneapolis earlier this year, and I was able to meet them for the first time and talk about their ancestor.
That is actually quite the amazing story, if you think about it, just rolling down through history.
And speaking of history, there are some ties that you have to St. Cloud State University and the research that you've done. It's more than just being sponsored by the Stearns History Museum as well as the SGSU History Department. You've actually had some considerable contact with some St. Cloud State professors in the course of researching this book. Isn't that correct?
The St. Cloud academic community has, three scholars with whom I had significant contact while I was researching and writing my book, and I'm really looking forward to coming back to St. Cloud. And this event is co-sponsored by, I think all three of them will be at this event, and it's co-sponsored by two of them. But you just nice. you have some of the cutting edge historians who have both studied about and written really pioneering stuff about 19th century Minnesota history. And it just happens that St. Cloud is a real center these days of groundbreaking study on 19th century Minnesota history.
Yeah, a little bit. Is one of those professors, is that Chris Lehman?
Chris Lehman, absolutely. Chris Lehman... I had contact with him before he published his book, and I've had contact with him since my book came out. And we've read each other's books and talked and exchanged emails extensively. And there's a real overlap between his areas of interest, which is primarily slavery in Minnesota. He was the first to document the late term keeping of slaves, both in the St. Cloud area and other parts of Minnesota, in the late 1850s, right in the lead up to the Civil War, and including during the Civil War, no one knew about those slaves there, and he's done a great job of documenting, and he's still working on it. And Mary Wingard, and Ed Atkins, both from St. Cloud State University, have published terrific stuff on Minnesota history just in the last few years that really puts a lot of new information on the table for the first time about that era of Minnesota history. So due to their contribution, I'm sure there are others haven't had contact with, but I did a lot of research for writing this book, and those three people are really strong contributors to the area of history, to this field of history.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I interviewed Chris Lehman for one of these stories as well. We chatted for quite a while, and that is some really interesting stuff. And it's one of those things when you're so close in history, like maybe something happened 10 years ago, you're not really going to get the whole story. But now, 150, 200 years later, there's all this information. It just takes somebody to really put it together. And, it's a painstaking process, to be sure.
Tell me.
Yeah. But nonetheless, there's all this out there. So I think the further you get away from an event not necessarily an event, more of a way of life, those kind of things, yes, there's still an effect within our lives, but yet at the same time, there's not, it isn't directly there anymore. We don't see it every day, but we see the shadows of it.
Right.
And where do those things come from? So.
Well, and that's particularly true. What I'm finding is since I've now spent years really studying the subject of slavery in areas where slavery was illegal, it's particularly true of that subject, of slavery as it was practiced in places where it was not lawful. Nobody after the Civil War wanted to make a record of the fact that they had kept slaves in an area where it was both illegal and where it was, after the Civil War particularly, overwhelmingly unpopular that they had done so. So they often, if they wrote memoirs or left accounts or left records, they didn't preserve the evidence that they had kept their slaves, that they'd kept slaves. And so you have to find it in other ways and try to reconstruct the history that people often not only didn't memorialize, but didn't want known. So it's a sleuthing process, not just an unearthing process sometimes.
So with this book, published and is out there, are you working on something new nowadays?
Yes, as a spinoff to the work I did on Godfrey, I looked through those pay records of the Army. And, of course, when I was looking through those records and focusing on Godfrey, I was paying particular attention to Minnesota. But ultimately, I decided to review, since I was going through so many of those boxes, to review the whole collection because I kept finding fascinating new stuff about slavery in other places where slavery is not well documented, as it's not that well documented. It had not been that well documented in Minnesota. And so my next book is going to be about, in effect, how the Army spread slavery across America, largely premised on this pay system and those pay records. And it's an amazing story.
Excellent, excellent. Well, that kind of about wraps up what we've got. Is there anything else you'd like to add in there today?
No, just that I'm really looking forward to coming to St. Cloud because of the tremendous contributions the three professors I know well have done there. Have embedded Minnesota history and are co-sponsoring this event. So I look forward to seeing people next week.
Excellent. And the leaves are changing, too. I don't know how they are out in New York right now. But
not yet, but I know the Minnesota season's well enough to know that it should be a great time to be there.
Excellent, excellent. Well, have a wonderful, safe journey, and we'll see you on campus this Wednesday.
Pleasure talking to you. Ask good questions. Thank you very much.
Once again, on this installment of the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota, we've been talking with Walt Bachman, author of Northern Slave, Black Dakota, The Life and Times of Joseph Godfrey. Walt Bachman will be on the St. Cloud State University campus on Wednesday, October 16th, beginning at 7 p.m. in the Voyager's Room of the Atwood Memorial Center. This presentation is sponsored by the Stearns History Museum and the Department of History at St. Cloud State University. For more information on this event, you can call University Communications at 320-308-2284.
can also search for this event on the St. Cloud State University website at www.stcloudstate.edu and enter in Walt Bachman in the search field. And you can also find this event listed on the Stearns History Museum website at stearns-museum.org. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and has been produced at KVSC, a proud member of AMPRS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities.